have officially have a quorum, so we can go ahead and get started. I know we were getting some agendas passed out, so if you need one, please raise your hand and she can bring one to you. Thank you for coming this evening and for taking a time out of your day to come and see us. We'll now officially call this public hearing to order. Is there a motion to approve the agenda for tonight's public hearing?
I so move.
And a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Tonight's public hearing, hosted by the Substance Abuse Advisory Commission, is on the proposed amendments to Chapter 13 of the Code of Ordinances pertaining to pawnbrokers and other dealers of secondhand property. Several stakeholders have been invited to provide initial public comment this evening. Each of these stakeholders will be allowed 5 minutes to speak. When called forward, I ask that you please sit at my left at the microphone over here. Following the public comments by those invited stakeholders, the floor will be open to additional public comment. Each individual will be limited to 5 minutes as well and should approach the podium at the front of the room, so right here, and please state your name and address prior to speaking. As a reminder to my fellow commissioners here, this public hearing is meant to solicit public feedback, and I'd like to ask that you limit your comments and or questions to those that are for this purpose of clarification. All right. We will go ahead and get started with the stakeholders. Jeff Adams from the Columbia Police Department, if you want to come on up.
Is that good? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Briefly stated, the Columbia Police Department's goal in dealing with property crimes is threefold, essentially. It's to reduce property crime by investigating, following leads, developing probable cause for the arrest of persons responsible for stealing-related offenses, being burglaries and larceny specifically. We want to return property to the victims, and then also we want to hold the offenders accountable for the crimes they've committed. Each crime kind of is made up of three sides. Basically, think of it as a triangle. You have the victim, you have the offender, and you have location. What we're doing here is we're trying to focus on the offender by disrupting the what you call the stolen goods market in Columbia and basically making it so it's not as easy for them to get rid of property that they've stolen as it once was. What is the stolen goods market? Again, briefly defined, it's any place where the offender can buy or sell stolen property. How is that market affected? Well, that market is affected by the items available, the ease in which they are stolen, and how quickly those items can be disposed of, sold typically, and do all that without getting caught. The items that are most likely to be stolen are easy to conceal, easy to carry, and easy to dispose of. They're highly sought after items like mobile devices is a good example. And then the offender needs a place or a person to where they can take the stolen property to where there's little to no questions or documentation. That's kind of generally what they want. Their objectives in all stealing-related crimes is typically to get rid of the items. They steal the items with an idea they have some place in mind they can take them. If they don't have a place they can take them, typically they won't steal them. And the stolen items are rarely ever kept. The crime is two parts. One is to steal, and then the second is to profit from the theft, and it's to trade or get rid of or to sell the stolen item. With these proposed changes, or this is basically what we are proposing change to the current pawn ordinance, is to add definition and examples of secondhand stores who would have to comply with the pawnbroker ordinance. Currently, we have about 15 stores that fit this secondhand title. They're stores that purchase used items with the intent to resell. We add information that the pawnbrokers and secondhand stores have to record in their register, such as currently it's not stated that they have to record the customer's address, date of birth, date and time of transaction, which employee received the item, the customer's current address and phone information, a picture of the item, and picture of the conveying customer. Now, the pawn shops currently do that. However, we want the secondhand stores to do it as well. Also, we're adding 7-day holding period, which allows time for the victim to report the crime, time for officers to take the report and submit their reports, and then time for the investigators to search leads online for the stolen property. We're also adding that a photo or digital image of the person and the item being sold to the store be attached to that ticket. We add that it is required for all records to be uploaded electronically to leads online. And we also want the word secondhand store to be put in place of any ordinance where the word pawnbroker is written. We also want to add the word secondhand store to Division 2, part of the licensing in the second half of the amendment, or the ordinance, excuse me. How this ordinance hopefully will change and reduce the thefts in Columbia is basically it will increase our ability to prosecute and hold criminal offenders responsible for their stealing-related crimes. I mean, that's the big one. If we add secondhand stores, a photo requirement, holding period, and electronic reporting, we'll provide the evidence prosecution needs to hold offender accountable. And with successful prosecution can lead to a number of things. It can get the offender the help they need if they have substance abuse issues. You get the property, the stolen property, back to the victim, which then gives them a sense of justice for the crime committed against them. And hopefully continued prosecution of these offenders will limit the property crimes occurring in Columbia, thus making the citizens of Columbia feel safer in their homes and businesses. This pawnbroker ordinance will apply to both pawnbrokers and secondhand stores. All stores have to operate under the same rule, making it fair for all businesses. Current ordinance does not do that. Secondhand stores have to keep the exact same records and documents as pawnbrokers, which are then open to inspection by law enforcement, and then they also have to electronically upload their records to Leeds Online. This ordinance hopefully will reduce the places an offender can sell or trade stolen items without providing pedigree information, item description, and a photo. If they have to do all that, it'll make them less likely. They'll be more scared to sell stolen property within the city limits of Columbia. And again, all this will hopefully increase the chance of making a successful case in the offender due to the evidence recorded by store employees.
Any questions? All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Next stakeholder I'd like to call up is Gary Taylor from Music Go Round.
Good evening. My name is Gary Taylor. I'm the owner of Music Go Round. We buy, sell, and trade used musical instruments. We're in our sixth year of business here in Columbia. For those less familiar with my business, we buy and sell music instruments to an average of over 500 customers per month. Although I operate within a franchise system, I am a small business owner working hard to serve our community. I want to thank the Substance Abuse Commission, the Columbia Police Department, Councilman Trapp, for allowing me to share my thoughts on the pending pawnbroker law for the City of Columbia. First, let me state that I appreciate the need for some type of pawnbroker and secondhand dealer law. Businesses such as ours need to make sure we conduct our operations to the highest standards. Our store already follows stringent policies and procedures regarding items purchased from my customers through our proprietary point-of-sale software, which captures and tracks all data related to transaction, including seller's name, address, picture identification, contact information, date and time of the transaction, and a list of what we purchased from the customer. In addition, we have a video camera which records the transactions. We also track customers who purchase instruments over $100 from us with the name, address, and phone number, so we can also track these individuals if needed. So items bought from our store and sold from our store have an extensive track record. With these stringent policies in place, we have assisted the Columbia Police Department, the Boone County Sheriff, and the Jefferson City Police Department on several occasions in solving theft crimes that led to convictions. With this being said, I would strongly urge those involved with drafting the pending pawnbroker ordinance to establish the following procedures. Number one, all items purchased need to have customer information, identification, description of the items being purchased, and serial numbers if possible. This information can either be recorded electronically, such as ours, or handwritten. Basically, what the ordinance states now is the information we would like to gather. Number two, all purchase transactions should be videotaped or a photo taken of the person selling the items. Number three, items valued at $300 or more should be entered in Leeds Online. And number four, items brought in for trade still recorded as purchases from our store. Now, what I cannot support is a seven-day hold period in the pending ordinance requiring me to take valuable merchandise off the sales floor for over a week and offering customers reduced inventory whenever they come into my store. I do not have additional space in my store to hold items. My total operation is dependent on getting purchased product to the sales floor and our website as quickly as possible to generate cash flow to stay in business. This requirement would significantly hinder my store's operation. In fact, could cause our store to go out of doing business, as I estimate it would cost me over $10,000 per month to comply with this requirement. We are also concerned with the seasonality of our products having to hold for 7 days, especially true during back-to-school selling period and a holiday selling period, which again would be even a greater loss of sales and cash flow. The hold period was initially established in pawnbroker laws throughout the country in the 1930s, when electronic transmittal did not exist and phone service was still a luxury, to ensure that stores had enough time to report lost or stolen items to the police department. In today's electronic world of data gathering and sharing, this hold period is overreaching and overburdens the store owner without providing a real benefit to the customer. Finally, the ordinance change does not directly regulate internet companies that list for sale or auction that sell used goods in the city, such as eBay or Craigslist. As a result, this ordinance change would discriminate against local brick and mortar businesses and place them at a competitive disadvantage. An individual can sell stolen goods over the internet through a faceless transaction. The proposed ordinance change ignores this issue. In conclusion, I want to think the true essence of the proposed ordinance change should be based on solely tracking purchases from customers. As previously outlined, having everyone on board with this basic requirement would be a significant enhancement in solving theft. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak and share my concerns, and I'll try to answer any questions.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions?
I do. How did you arrive at the $10,000 a month figure?
We have store statistics we can go through and just get an estimate on what we purchase and how much it would cost us to hold that item versus a 2 or 3 year history. So that's an average, could be a little bit higher than that actuality. And in fact, during the seasons, during the holiday season period or back to school, that could even be greater than that simply because of the seasonality of doing business.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
I have one more question also. Did you say you use video or photography?
We use video.
You use video?
Yes, and I think either one. We just want to make sure that the customer has a good experience in our store.
Yeah.
And we do have signs posted in our store that smile, you're on camera. So, you know, people are aware that we do have videotaping going on and, in fact, has helped solve some crimes by extracting that data and sending it off to the appropriate authorities. So videotape is what we use, and that to me is a preferred method. That way you can get a lot of different angles, a lot of different possibilities with that.
Do you have a specific resolution that it's at that's been good? Or
I'm sorry, Molly?
A specific resolution that video's taken at?
I'm not sure of the resolution. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Yeah. I was just wondering.
I couldn't answer that, but I can get that data to you.
No, you're fine. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your time. All right.
I have one more question.
Yeah, sorry.
Is there a particular instrument that is more conducive to theft or resale? I mean, I'm guessing that you do business across a wide spectrum of instruments. Is there something in particular that somebody would be on the lookout for or wanting to resell?
It's been our experience that the higher ticket items such as guitars, acoustic and electric guitars, seem to be the one item that we track everything, obviously, but we especially are cognizant of that fact. Because a lot of times that's left in cars, they're unlocked. If somebody is playing a gig, for example, a musician, and they leave it unattended, it could be stolen from that particular instance too. But guitars would be our number one theft item we'd be on the lookout for.
Perfect. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you again. All right, next we will go ahead and have Steve Weiss from Family Pawn come up.
Actually, Pat McCollum.
Oh, sorry.
Steve was unable to make it due to a family emergency. I work for Family Pawn. I have for 29 years, and those 29 years have been behind the counter, basically dealing with, you know, Columbia citizens. You know, I think we've done a great job over the years of building our business on trust. We work greatly with the police department. You know, we turn over that information. We do everything. We do ID. We report the leads online. We have video. We willingly turn over stolen merchandise. The big question that I have is, you know, why is this ordinance? Why do we need these changes? And I think we have to ask that question. From our standpoint, we don't need these changes. In 2014 and 2015, we did right at 39,000 transactions between two stores. That's loans and purchases. We had right about 42 items recovered by the police department. So we don't see that there's a problem. We don't think the stolen merchandise in Columbia is going through our stores. I mean, it's, you know, we report it, so, you know, it should be caught if it's coming in. You know, it's obviously going to other places. Could be going to secondhand dealers that don't have to report. I think there are probably some other ways that criminals know that they can get rid of that merchandise and not get caught with it. Because they're, you know, they will be arrested. Whether they get prosecuted or not, we don't know that. You know, prosecution rates are pretty low for people that sell us stolen merchandise. You know, I think that's something that, you know, should be looked at down the road, is how can we do a better job of prosecuting, you know, because when we have, we've taken their ID, you know, we have a video, we have the merchandise, it's been identified as stolen, that should be good enough for prosecution. Some of the other things in the ordinance, the having to keep video for a year, that is an undue burden on us. I don't know how we would come up with all the storage to keep that video for a year. Not sure what the police department keeps their video that's not tagged as evidence, but I don't think anybody keeps video for a year. You know, one of the other things in this ordinance, it says that we need to, that we would report to a third-party database designated by the city. You know, would that ever change? You know, currently it's Leads Online, and, you know, they're the industry standard. But, you know, the way the ordinance is written, that could change at any time. That's concerning to us because that would cost us money. All in all, we think we do a very good job of keeping stolen merchandise out of the pawn shops. We do believe it's going someplace else, and we just don't see that there's a problem that we need to be, you know, have more regulations put on us.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Thank you so much for your time. Michael Trapp with the City Council. Thank you.
Appreciate everyone coming out this evening and spending your evening in City Council chambers. I do it frequently. And appreciate the commission holding this hearing. I asked the Substance Abuse Advisory Commission to do this to really assist the police in engaging stakeholders, holding public hearings to give the public a chance to comment on our proposed ordinance. How I became involved in this issue is I was approached by someone who had taken a friend of theirs to several pawn shops to rebuy things that had been stolen by her heroin-addicted son. And he had proposed that there ought to be a database, there ought to be a waiting list. And so I brought those to city staff, and in conversations with the police, I learned that there was already a draft ordinance in regards to both increasing the regulatory burner on pawn shops and also bringing in secondhand dealerships into that same regime. So this is public policy when it's most interesting is when it is dealing with competing values. And I'm a big believer in small businesses. I love secondhand goods, you know, creating, saving stuff from the landfill, creating a market, keeping thing, building artifact level things that we continue to trade amongst ourselves is a much better model than our disposable culture. And so I have a great deal of respect for those industries and for small business in general. But I also think that we need to take every step that we can take to prevent crime. And I'm not currently satisfied with the status quo. We have an understaffed police department, and I, as a legislator, feel honor-bound to provide the ordinances that the police are telling me that they feel are necessary to help enforce the laws of the community and keep us all safe from property crime. These burglaries are devilishly hard to prevent. Burglars will They get caught when they see cars in the driveways. Clever burglars have ways to work around that. One single burglar can really push up the whole crime numbers for the entire community. So they're looking at what can we do about shoring up our ability to fence stolen merchandise. From what we've heard, the testimony that we've heard in the Substance Abuse Advisory Commission is that they're rational actors, that people, when they decide what they're going to steal, they make those decisions based upon how are they going to be able to turn those items into cash. And so this ordinance is an attempt to balance out the burden placed upon secondhand dealers and pawn shops with the needs of the entire community for us to stay safe and protected. And so how that works out is an open process. We have a draft ordinance. We're going to receive public comment during this hearing. And out of that, staff, the police, will draft an ordinance that will come in front of City Council. That will also be an open process, where you'll have a chance to make public comment. Council may make further changes. They may send it back for more work. They may vote it up. They may vote it down. Nothing has been assured. I don't have four votes to pass anything. I can tell you that there is one vote for change, you know? And so I think as we engage in this process, I think it will be most productive to think, how can I change this ordinance that allows it to work within my business framework, where I can still make a profit and I can still operate the way that I can, but we can increase the safety within the community? And again, it's a political process. It will take four votes to pass that, you know. And I would encourage people to reach out to the mayor and their representative if you live in the city, and engage in the process, so that we can try to prevent that. We're bringing both of these things together. Believe me, in politics, the best thing would be is to divide and conquer. It would be best to take on the pawn shops and then take on the secondhand dealers. We're bringing both together really at the request of the representatives of the pawn shop industry, that they already face considerable regulatory burden and often do similar transactions to folks who have no regulatory burden right now. So we're bringing both of these things together, not because it's smart politics, because it's the right thing to do. For those of you, I've met with many of you. If I have not, I'm happy to sit down and discuss, to see your operations, to understand, to listen through, and hear where you're coming from, so that we can kind of come to the best. My plan is that we reach as much accommodation that we can, that we still have a workable ordinance that's going to increase our safety, and then we bring that in front of council, we make our case, and then we see what a majority of council wants to do. It's not assured what's going to happen. It's an open process, and I appreciate everyone for coming out. And I'm happy to entertain any questions from the commission.
Thank you, Michael. Does anybody have any questions? I don't think we accept questions from out there, but feel free to come forward and ask anything or bring anything forward at public comment. Thank you so much.
I'll stay after if anyone has any questions. Happy
Perfect.
To address.
Thank you so much, Michael. All right, and our last stakeholder that we'll have come forward at this time is Neil Copeland from Play It Again Sports.
Okay, so most of the guys have already mentioned a lot of things that I was going to mention, so I'll just point out a couple that that I've made notes for myself. We as well take a driver's license when people come in. Honestly, if mom brings in a couple pair of soccer shoes, I'm not going to do it, but anything above that, you know, we do. And so we already have name, address, photo ID, driver's license number, the whole nine yards. And it seems to me as if the purpose of this got started because there were certain stores who were way below standard. I feel like some of these points are very overburdensome. And I feel like if the stores who were way below standard brought their act up to at least the bare bones standard, that could fix most of the problems by itself. Some of the things that really will affect us the most, one of the points in the ordinance currently says we have to photograph every item. I ran a report for the first 6 months of the year and we had 70,000 items. That's three new staff members, you know, to take pictures. Then for me to stick those items in the back room for 7 days, I mean, that's a storage room And so, I mean, I would have to literally build somewhere to put that stuff. And so that, you know, if we've got the person, we do have cameras as well. If we have a person who comes in with something, I've got driver's license, I've got them on videotape. The holding it for 7 days with that many items and photographing it is probably the biggest thing for me. I couldn't manage that process. You know, if I had enough money to hire 3 new people, I would have been paying myself more already. You know, I mean, the money's not there to hire more people. So, that's a big one for me. The other one is the taking a picture of the person. In the current ordinance, points 9 and 10, there's no or in between those. It's video or photograph. It has both of them listed. And, if a person were to come in, and I would have to, you know, stand them up against the wall and take a mugshot of them. That's the only way to get a 90 degree angle of somebody. I mean, that's, you're going to chase customers away. They will do it once, figure out that that is not what they want to be a part of, no matter how legit they are. I mean, it could, you know, like currently the pair of soccer shoes, I'd have to get a, you know, a picture of a person at a 90 degree angle. And that's, I mean, that's going to chase my customers away. They will literally pile them up and throw them in a garage sale somewhere. You know, we do thousands upon thousands of pairs of used soccer, baseball, football, you know, cleats. So if there's an or in there, you know, a photograph of a person or videotape, then that could be dealt with. But currently there's not. It's got both listed as requirements. And the one thing that I have a decent sized problem with is this is City of Columbia. So if I lift my store up and I move it to Lake of the Woods, all of a sudden none of this pertains to me. That's a pretty big impact potentially. Anybody who has a new business, why would they ever put it in the city limits? Just, I mean, you can be 1 minute outside of the town and, you know, and you have a new business there. And so the last thing is I realize why they do not want any offsite locations, why they want you to list exactly what address you're going to do business at, but we do offsite events all the time. So I'll go to a team's meeting and have a used buy day where they'll bring all of their gear that they grew out of and we'll trade them up for new stuff, you know. And so that's overreaching, in my opinion. That would prevent me from going to a senior citizen's home to pick up their treadmill they can no longer use, you know, because I couldn't buy it from them. I would have to somehow find a way to make them bring it to me, which is, I mean, it's not gonna, that just doesn't make sense, you know. So I think there's, as it's currently written, I think there's a lot of work to be done in the ordinance. The purpose of the ordinance is totally fine. I mean, I have no issues with the theory of it. I just think it needs to be worded better, you know, more correct. Maybe listing a dollar amount for the item, like Gary mentioned. You know, we can have a discussion about what level of pricing things are, but even at the listing for sporting goods of $25, that would mean that every baseball, you know, wouldn't count. But even, you know, a 20-year-old glove, just because it was a high-end glove that, you know, I would have to count it and take a – and so I want to eliminate some of the things that are really not getting stolen. There's – of all the items that we have, there's, you know – pretty much one type of item that might get stolen and potentially brought in, but that we don't see hardly anything either. I mean, we're pretty strict, and we grill the people pretty hard to make sure we think it's there. So
thank you so much for your comment. We're at time right now, so I'm going to ask if there's any questions from the commission.
Yeah, so same question to you. What would be your item or items that you would keep your eye on in terms of being stolen?
In the almost 10 years I've been there, I cannot remember a thing besides a golf club. And it's not a club, it's a set. It's someone who left it in the back of their truck while they were in the mall parking lot. It's someone who left it in the back of their vehicle unlocked in their neighborhood, you know, along the street or something. And so it's, you know, of all the items, I mean, no, I've never had a stolen treadmill, nor do I think I ever will. You know, no one's going to steal a treadmill and try to lug it in. So it's always a set of golf clubs. And so the sporting goods, you know, it's there's very few things that are really of value to get stolen. You know, I can't remember anything besides a golf club.
Perfect. Thanks.
Any other questions? All right. I'm now going to open the floor to additional public comment. As a reminder, if you are each limited to 5 minutes and should approach the podium here at the front of the room instead of over there, and please state your name and address prior to speaking. I also like to remind everybody that this is not a final draft of the ordinance. We are really truly seeking your opinion so that we can see what we can sort of advise moving forward. So thank you so much, and now open it to public comment.
Hi, my name is Chris Ann Lewis, 2609 East Broadway, Suite 109 is my business address. I own the Plato's Closet since 2009. From 2003 to 2015, I also operated Plato's Closets in the St. Louis area. In that time, we moved our location several times, which gave me the opportunity to work with multiple police departments in St. Louis County. In April, I did send the council members and the mayor a 3-page letter detailing how Plato's Closet works, precautions we take when we suspect items are stolen, our current inventory level of over 60,000 pieces on the floor and in our back room, and the average cost per item we pay directly to our customers, which is $3.30 per item. I received feedback from Councilman Trapp, and he also came to my store to see our standards, precautions, and training we have in place. It was a great opportunity for him to see firsthand how we aim to deter stolen items from coming into my store since we opened our doors in 2009. I did this without an ordinance. It was the way I did business. Since 2003, I have operated all my stores on a zero tolerance for stolen items. If we suspect something, we still ask for proof of purchase or we reject the items. So if something comes in with sensor holes, it clearly isn't theirs, they're acting strange, we'll say, we're so sorry, we're not able to take that into the store. If they push, we give them a reason. If they push, we ask them to leave. I don't want the items in the store, and I do not want the people that bring the items coming into my store. The standards we currently have in place include requiring an ID to sell, and we do take the ID from the customer, verify their picture, unless it's a customer that we know by face, but we still have them enter their ID into our kiosk, and then again, it goes into our point of sale system, along with their current address, name, phone number, and we do not collect a date of birth, though. All of this has been sufficient for all the police departments that I've worked with in St. Louis, including Chesterfield, which was really low crime, so a stolen purse from Plato's Closet was a big deal, and municipalities like Kirkwood and St. Louis County, where used theft was kind of the least of their concerns. They had much bigger fish to fry. I have also worked with loss prevention departments catching theft rings for Nordstrom, Kohl's, Macy's, and here in Columbia, JCPenney and Walmart. Because of the standards that we take, because of the way we process our items, the training we have in place, we are actually able to contact loss prevention. A lot of times big retailers don't care, sometimes they do. We've been able to recover items for them and be able to keep the things behind the counter long enough for the police to arrive. I support businesses not buying stolen items, and I support a police department. However, I do not support guidelines placed on secondhand businesses that put customer experience at the bottom and are not fair to small business owners. Placing 7-day holds on items bought in, restricting the times items can be brought in, mug-style shot photos of customers, to name a few, are not going to keep drugs out of people's hands, and it's not going to keep people from stealing things. Instead, this ordinance is punishing the business owners and the honest customers that come to our stores every day. Let's not forget the over $500,000 customers made in 2015 from Plato's Closet from selling to us that went back into the City of Columbia, bars, restaurants, and other businesses. Currently, I have 2 cases open. One was from over a month ago, where someone allegedly stole used clothing out of the back of someone's car. There was nothing suspicious about the transaction, but with our standards in place, we had the person's ID, the items that were sold to us, and all of the information needed. The police, we encouraged the victim to file a police report, which they did. A police officer did come to the store, collect all the evidence, and it's now been over 30 days, and the merchandise is still sitting in my back room, and we have not heard anything from the police department with a case literally handed to them. This is not the first time that this has happened. This won't be the last. I also have a pair of shoes, is another instance where a police officer came out. We gave them all of the information, and we have not heard anything for over 30 days. Again, I support and understand the sacrifice officers give every day. However, placing more regulations that ultimately have to be monitored and followed up by an already understaffed police department is not going to solve anything. While I have been told several times by Councilman Trapp, and of course I'm pleased to hear that clothing will not be included in the ordinance, I'm asking for more clarity and thoughtfulness to be used if any pawn ordinance is passed. Secondhand clothing dealers, by definition, it's not very clear. As written, our costume jewelry we pay customers $1.50 to $5 for is still included. Please listen to business people that are in the trenches every day. Placing more burdens on businesses when businesses who record and monitor all items in their stores are not able to be utilized by the police department to the fullest doesn't seem to be the answer. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And just a second, and I'll see if anybody has any questions. No questions? All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Good evening. My name is Brian Mays, and I operate Family Pawn Stores with Pat. We have addresses at 915 Business Loop 70 and 2416 Paris Road here in Columbia. By and large, I disagree with every facet of this proposed ordinance change. There are several reasons why, and I'm going to start with the seven-day wait period. In my experience, it would be extraordinarily expensive for us to comply with that standard. Not as much on your small items, your CDs, your DVD players, the little things. It's the large transactions that we do, which are generally precious metal related. Precious metal market is very volatile, and it's subject to hourly change, much less daily or weekly change. And in several occasions, we have had transactions that if put in a one-week restriction, it would cost us $10,000 to $20,000 on one transaction, potentially. There's also potential for gain, but more often than not, people sell in a high market anticipating that it's going to go down, and in that case, we would be the big loser. The second thing that I wanted to talk about is the video requirement. Currently, we put the highest quality video surveillance equipment in our stores voluntarily that we can obtain and afford. And generally speaking, our system is made to record about 45 to 50 days. The problem with having it as being required, especially for a year, right now if I have a failure, man, that's a bummer. It's too bad that the DVR system broke, but I'm not criminally responsible. Whereas if it's required by statute and I have a problem, I am criminally responsible. So to extend it to a year, I anticipate for the storage to extend our video surveillance to a year could cost in excess of $10,000 per location. To give it the level of redundancy that I would need to avoid prosecution, I'm going to have to double that to have at least one level of backup to kind of cover our tail so that we don't end up in trouble with the law for trying to do our very best. As far as things that I do kind of understand where the council and the police department are coming from is I do support increasing the level of fairness, because right now I feel that we are regulated at the very highest possible level that we can really bear, and so many other businesses are not. So I do support the concept of bringing some fairness and leveling the playing field, because I feel that right now some of the criminal element are purposefully avoiding us and purposely seeking those industries and businesses out because they know that they can get away with it. Now then, as far as I think it's going to be really difficult for the council or law enforcement to draw the line as to where do we stop that? Or do we hold Plato's Closet or the clothing dealers to the same standard? Because they're clearly not the problem, in my opinion. I don't know who the problem is, but I'm certain that it's not us. And the last thing that I want to address is I don't understand how we're making the coalition or the collection that pawn shops are contributing to the substance abuse problem. I find it very, very difficult to draw that line because the number of pawn shops in the community has stayed the same for 30 plus years. And while the number of pawn shops has stayed the same, the drug abuse problem has gone up and increased a lot. And I think that it's increased more a result of population change than pawn shop involvement. So I think that's all I got.
Oh, I have a question for you. Sure. On average, do you know how long an item sits on your shelves?
Yes. In most stores, our inventory turns over about 4 to 5 times a year. So on average, you could say about 3 months. Some items turn faster than that, but in the game of averages, about 3 months.
It seemed like the most common complaint was the 7-day holding period, but you're saying the average item sits on your shelf for 3 to 4 months?
Yes. Okay. And the exception to that would be items that are particularly liquid, like precious metals, a lot of firearms. Those things move very, very fast, and I have to move them fast. When I buy 50 ounces of gold from a bank, I have to sell it in the same market that I buy it in, or I'm going to lose my shirt. We're talking about very, very skinny margins on precious metals, and that's a brokerage part of our industry that a lot of people don't even understand or even know that exists, but it's a very, very important part of what we do. We sell precious metals and broker those deals for banks, financial institutions, individual investors, retirees, you name it. We help those folks out.
Any other questions?
Yeah. I just have one question. So currently, if somebody walks into one of your stores with a piece of jewelry, let's say that's made of gold,
yes.
You purchase it from them.
Uh-huh.
It's not done as a loan, but you actually purchase the item. Do you melt it down the same day? I mean, are we talking about the same day that somebody walks in and sells that to you?
No.
That?
No, we are currently required to hold items for 24 hours.
Okay.
And generally speaking, we hold them a little bit longer than that anyway. There are situations where if we buy an item on a Tuesday that is going to be melted and our scheduled day to go to the melting place is Thursday, that there would be a 2-day wait involved. But we always hold items for at least the 24 hours that we're statutorily required to do so.
And when is the information about that item that you've taken in entered into Leeds Online?
Generally speaking, between 5:30 and 5:45 every evening.
So the day that it's taken in?
Yes.
That night?
Yes. It's not real time, but it's as close as we can get it. And the process that we have to transmit that data is built into our point of sale system. So all of the data collection that we do from the person's driver's license, the description of the item, all of that has to be scrutinized very, very carefully by our staff. And we make sure that we do an extraordinarily good job because, A, we want to catch people who sell us stolen stuff. We want them to be prosecuted. We want them to face the maximum penalty because I don't want them coming back in our store selling us anything else stolen. Stolen property is the last thing that we want to deal with. Unfortunately, it's a part of the industry that we don't have much choice in it. Every once in a while, we'll see something, but it is a very, very small number of items. Pat pointed out that out of 40,000 items, it's a very, very small number. What was it, Pat? 42 items out of 40,000. We're talking very, very small number of items, pretty small problem. Now, part of that might be because we have spent so much time working with Columbia law enforcement and getting the word out that if you're going to sell something hot, don't sell it to us because you're most likely going to get caught.
And when you say 42 items, is that 42 instances where you had like a complaint or a police inquiry or a
Those are 42 items that law enforcement came and put on what they call PD hold. There is a legal process for them to do that. There's quite a bit of documentation involved. Of those items, not all of those lead to prosecution. In fact, it's a terribly small percentage of those lead to prosecution. And if there's a real clear problem that we can identify here, that is it. I don't know what more we can possibly do to assist the prosecution process, because we're already giving them everything that's humanly possible. We see the same driver's licenses that get presented at liquor stores to buy a 12-pack of beer. We see the same driver's licenses that people use at the bank to cash their paycheck. We see the same driver's licenses that law enforcement encounter when they pull somebody over on the highway. But for some reason, the driver's licenses we see are insufficient. And that's a real hole in our system. And if there's a problem, that's it.
I guess the reason I asked that question is because it seems like it's conceivable that more items could be sold to you that were stolen. It's just there's no report or complaint made.
I guess that's possible. I don't know of a case where somebody had something stolen from them and they just said, you know, I just don't care about that. I'm not even going to report it. What I do see is people who report things stolen. They get identified that we took them in. We put them on police hold and we do all of the processes we're required to do with our full cooperation. But then we find out after the fact that the person who stole it, for whatever reason, the victim does not want to prosecute. And if the victim decides they don't want to prosecute, that changes the whole playing field. The instance that Mr. Trapp spoke about where some family had to go around from store to store to store to store to buy their property back, if they're willing to prosecute in the state of Missouri, that does not happen. They get their property back after a process at no cost to them. The only time somebody has to buy their property back is if they're unwilling to prosecute. If they're unwilling to prosecute, then the guy who stole it doesn't get in trouble. And oftentimes, it's victim shifting where we as the pawnbrokers become the victims because we're the ones that are out the item and any potential profit that would have been associated with that item. Now, don't misunderstand me. I don't want to profit from stolen property. I absolutely don't. I don't want to deal with it at all. But I don't want to shift victimship from somebody over here to me because they're unwilling to prosecute.
A couple of you folks have mentioned that you feel you're up to the standards and that there are businesses that should be brought up to your standards.
It's some people's opinion that. I think it's going to be very, very difficult to define what the threshold is. It just seems that, generally speaking, with laws, municipalities, and regulations, it seems to be an all-or-nothing kind of a concept. So anybody who deals in used merchandise, if you're going to hold everybody that deals in used merchandise to the same standard that we are, you're going to have a lot of very unhappy business people. Because the burden to do what we do is extensive, very, very extensive. And I guarantee that there would be a lot of public backlash from these secondhand good dealers. That being said, there probably are some other businesses that should be held to the same standard that we are, just out of the fact of fairness. But I don't know how you can achieve that fairness without applying it to all. And I really don't want to see it applied to all, but it should be applied to people who do business with items that are similar to what we deal with.
What would be an example of a business that gets by without meeting your standards?
Excuse me?
What would be an example of a business that isn't required to live up to your standards that you think should be?
Well, right now, the only businesses that have to report to Leeds Online or I think hold items for 24 hours are businesses that are licensed as pawnbrokers. So everybody who deals in anything used is at a lower standard than we are, which would include every gun shop, every secondhand store, your thrift shops, your sporting goods stores, music shops, a lot of the jewelers, in fact, almost all of the jewelers buy and trade jewelry in one way or another. The list is endless. It would be a huge number of businesses that would be affected.
Thank you.
I guess one thing I don't understand is it seems like, and I'm trying to understand the issue fully, so I apologize if it seems like I'm being contrarian, but it seems like we have two sides of the issue and not a lot of people kind of in the middle. Some people are saying there's this market for the stolen goods, and we're here because we feel like it's contributing to a substance abuse problem. And then a lot of other people saying that there really aren't a lot of stolen goods going through pawn shops and secondhand stores. And so I'm just trying to understand what's the truth here.
I think that I can best explain it by saying that because we're held to the regulatory requirements that we are, we don't see a lot of the stolen property. And it's got to go somewhere, and a portion of it has got to be going to other secondhand dealers that do not have to report like we do. Now, the lion's share probably gets sold just on the black market on the street. And there's no way to stop that or curb it. And if these regulations were more fairly distributed, at some point in time, the criminal element would learn to not sell or get rid of stolen merchandise to any of these businesses, get rid of all of it on the street, in which case there would be no reporting at all. So it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy that the solution to the problem is really hard to get to, and it's really just how do we control and prevent items from being stolen in the first place?
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
All right. Great. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
Hello.
Hi.
My name is Daniel Moscato. My address is 607 Randy Lane in Columbia. I'm a member of the City of Columbia's Human Rights Commission, but I'm speaking here as a private citizen, not representing the view of the commission. I'm concerned about a possible First Amendment violation with this statute, specifically the free exercise clause. As I understand it, this proposal includes a requirement for a photo of the person with sunglasses and hats or head coverings removed. This, in my opinion, could violate some religious practices that require head coverings. And if you think it's necessary to have photos taken at all, which other people have brought up might not be, I'd like to see a very clear exemption for religious reasons along the lines of the DMV also. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Any questions?
Excuse me. Hi, my name is Dan Trim, and I'm a owner of Tiger Pawn. I've been there for 26 years. As a lot of people have stated here, you know, pawn shops are highly regulated at the state level already. Let me just describe a normal pawn shop transaction for you guys. A normal transaction looks like this. A customer comes in to sell or pawn an item. A price is agreed upon, and the customer is asked to present a proof of valid ID, such as a state driver's license, a state ID card, military ID, whatsoever. The identification is scanned into the computer. We record the make, model, and serial number, or physical weights and measurements of jewelry, along with the description of the merchandise, and print all the info to a physical ticket that the customer must sign. All the while this is happening, they are being recorded on high-definition digital cameras. Furthermore, every transaction, including all the information needed to identify the customer and the items they brought in, are uploaded to a third party called a database called Leads Online, which we've heard about. From there, law enforcement officials across several states can cross-check those items with the stolen items reports. Pawn shops and law enforcement, using the same method, have for years worked in tandem to solve many burglaries that would have otherwise been impossible to unravel. Through this partnership, the number of stolen items showing up at pawn shops has declined tenfold in the last 10 years and continue to decline to this day. The bottom line is the thieves have figured out that if you sell something stolen at a pawn shop, you're going to get busted. The system isn't broke. In fact, it works pretty darn good. I have a couple problems with the ordinance, particularly items 9 and 10 under section 1377, subsection A. Under this section, provision 9 asks us to take, and I quote, a high-definition digital image of the head and shoulders of a person taken at a 90-degree angle with no head covering, dark glasses, or similar object that obscures the person's facial features. I've spoken to my customers about this provision, and the overwhelming majority, who again are law-abiding citizens, feel this to be an assumption of guilt and eerily similar to submitting to a mugshot, and most of them said that they find this demeaning and humiliating. I would ask that this provision of the new ordinance be removed, especially since the customer is already being recorded on high-definition video. Furthermore, Provision 10 asks pawnbrokers and secondhand stores to take, in addition to Provision 9, a photograph of that same individual with the items that they're bringing in for sale. This too seems overly intrusive and unnecessary considering every transaction is already recorded with high-definition video. For these reasons, I would ask that Provision 10 be removed from the proposed ordinance as well. Tiger Pawn, and I know Family Pawn and a lot of other stores, have always cooperated with law enforcement and always will. But I ask you to consider what is just and fair lawmaking and what laws might be intrusive or demeaning. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any questions?
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Hello, my name is Stacy Allen. Business address at 7 South 10th Street here in Columbia. My store, New Beginning Consignment Clothing, has been operating in the downtown business district since 1980 and in its current locations on South 10th Street since 1985. I am the third owner and had been the manager under the previous owner for the better part of 15 years before taking ownership in the fall of 2014. Since the beginning, 36 years ago, we have been a paper and pen business, meaning that we literally handwrite an inventory list of every consignor. I have one here if you'd like to see it. Every item is then ticketed with the consignor's own personal identification number. We do not require consignors to show ID, as it would be foolish to provide us with false information considering we send a written check to the address on file at the end of their 90-day consignment period. Presently, we schedule roughly 100 items a day to consider for consignment, with a 50-item limit for each consignor per appointment. Our average consignor is generally female, though not always, and if I were to guess, between the ages of 30 and 65 years of age. Many have been bringing into the store for 10 years or more. Imagine, if you will, the reaction of these ladies if I were forced to suddenly start treating them as if they were potential criminals by taking their mugshot and demanding their driver's licenses. Imagine further the storage space needed for 100 items of clothing per day and for 7 days. The average 5-foot rack can easily hold 100 thin T-shirts, but a mixture of tops, jeans, winter coats, prom dresses, and business suits would indeed take far more storage space than I presently have on site. All told, this proposal in its current form would carry a hefty price tag for my little store, both in upfront cost of the technology required and also in the extended cost of additional man hours and the possibility of off-site storage. These costs would undoubtedly be passed along to my customers in the form of inflated prices of otherwise affordable used goods.
Thank you.
I had a question for you. Do you know off the top of your head how long the average item sits on a shelf?
Sometimes I might sell something the same day it comes in the store, as we strive to get our things out on the floor that day. Sometimes they rotate out and go to charity at the end of their 90-day consignment period.
It's a 90-day, is that what you
said? Yes, it's okay. A 90-day consignment period.
Quick question. I'm sure, ma'am, I had a quick question for you. I'm sure that you had read that clothing is actually excluded from this ordinance. Does your business...
That jewelry is not, and I do carry jewelry.
That's what I was going to ask, if there were other... Do you buy precious metal?
No, I do not.
And how do you know when somebody walks in and they have a piece of jewelry, how do you decide whether or not it's something that you'd be willing to purchase? Or that you would put on consignment?
It's actually left up to my own personal discretion what I take from, you know, one instance to another.
But I was asking that question as far as, do you draw the line if it's precious metal, if it's real gold, that you wouldn't consign that?
No, generally, if somebody has something that's actually like a precious metal, I divert them to one of the pawn shops. I am not set up to decipher the value or the weight of such things.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
My name is Paul Modisett. I live at 2200 Powell Drive, Columbia, Missouri. And I saw when this initially came up and it was tabled that it kind of got me pretty upset. And once again tonight, I came home from work and I'm sitting back reading a newspaper. And in the front page, you're still wanting to continue this debate. I'm here that for the reason that I find it really offensive that allegedly people that use the pawn shops are on drugs or using drugs. And I'm probably one of the biggest persons for getting loans at multiple pawn shops. I don't get loans for drugs. I get loans to fix my car heater, fix the car muffler. I don't have, you know, I live day to day. And I think all the items, they have social security, serial numbers on all these items. And if people aren't logging their tools and their personal items of value through home video or making a personal note of their items of value, their power tools, the serial numbers, that's their problem. It's their property. If someone comes and steals it, once again, that's between them and the thief. This doesn't have anything to do with city council or the pawn shops. This has to do with people who you claim are using drugs and going to the pawn shop and using drugs. And it has to do with people who have stolen property. I think we've heard well tonight that the process is in place at the pawn shop that if you take in stolen property, you're going to get busted. It has serial numbers. You have to have a police report for those serial numbers to be researched for you to be found, you know, of your crime. And I know they all cooperate with the police department. So it's a wash. You're just wasting our time and putting undue duress on people and going to continue to cause undue duress on people to do business with these businesses who don't have stolen property, who are just needing to get a loan. You know? I don't personally care to go to the bank and pay $30 for being 1 cent overdrawn. And I don't particularly like the payday loan industry. And what's that, checking to cash and all those various scams. I got property. I take it in. They don't give me very much money, which is real good incentive to come get your item back. I can pay. I got 90 days to default. After 30 days, past my 90 days, I have to start paying every 30 days. I get to keep my property. I'm okay. I'm good. That's how we live. But to say people are going into pawn shop and borrowing money to use hard drugs and this, that, and the other is just absurd. And I just came here to speak for all behalf on the people that just, you know, I don't think anybody here, you ever used a pawn shop? Anybody? You ever had a loan? You ever took your clothes to a consignment store? I've cleaned out apartments where there's thousands of dollars worth of clothes in there. My boss tells me to throw them in the trash. Well, that seems kind of messed up. Years back, I used to take them to the consignment stores. They don't pay anything for them, so I don't think anybody's out stealing clothes to go to the consignment store. That's absurd, totally. But I do take them and donate them to Wardrobe and Salvation Army and various other places. So, anyways, I just wanted to come here and tell you that all of these this so-called properties, you know, they can be videoed and known, and they have serial numbers, and they're known. And they're just out here chasing phantoms. If you want to do something, ratchet it up on the criminal element. Because I think people that steal ought to get took out behind the woodshed. And they don't do that. So, and people stealing to do drugs, they need to get some help. So, and I don't think sending them to prison is really the answer, getting them help, but they need to get some help. But coming down on the pawn business and coming down on the consignment stores and making it real inconvenient for people to do legitimately own their property and want to take their property and get it loaned, because that's what they do and that's what some of us have to do, is just off the hook. So I think we need to sit back and think about what's going on here. And I'm sure that if you spent much time with the police department, really understanding how, in some ways, they're powerless, it is what it is. But no one's engaged in it or aiding and abetting any criminal activity, so to speak. I think the system works great. I don't think there's anybody going into the pawn shop with something stolen that's just a nut that needs to get picked up. And, yeah, we need to get them off the street because it's well known. So thank you.
Thank you. And I do want to clarify for everybody, we are just holding this forum to get public comment and to take what you are saying back to the drawing board and see what we need to do. So it's not that we think that everybody using a pawn shop or secondhand dealer is going to get drugs. So please know that's not at all what our thought is. Were there any questions for him, though? Okay, thank you. Come, you're fine. Come on forward.
Good evening. My name is Brett Wissman, and I own Consign and Design, which is a high-end consignment shop on 9th Street, on North 10th. Let me get my address straight. The problem I have with the ordinance is a lot of my clients like me to come to their home, and I handpick a lot of their items. Granted, it's clothing, but I need to be able to be off my address, so to speak, and out of my business to do a lot of my business. I don't have any problems with theft. My customers don't bring in items that are stolen. I do take, I get all their information, and I also get a copy of the driver's license because I do specialize in high-end handbags. So I just would like to say my little point. I would like to be able to still do my business off my site.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks. Thank you so much.
Hello. I'm Sabrina Garcia Rubio. I own Mod Vintage Clothing and Costumes at 818 East Broadway. My business sells and trades vintage clothing and jewelry, and we have since November 2000. We pay 30% cash to the seller based on our resale price. At the time of purchase, we take the seller's name and information, such as address and phone number. Our purchases can always be linked to any seller at any time. I personally have never experienced any goods that were sold to Mod being reported as stolen. When customers have given us a list of items that were stolen from them, we have, to this date, not seen the said items come through our store. And that way, it is a low, and in our experience, no occurrence situation. However, hearing Chris Ann's story from Plato's about having items that were stolen over 30 days ago and still have not been resolved after turning the information over to the police, makes me think that if this ordinance is supposed to mitigate theft of items, I don't trust that our work towards providing all the information needed to secure an arrest and return of goods would be handed over to a dedicated and diligent team of authorities making the time, effort, and ultimately the loss of profit on our part in vain. As a dealer in vintage items, but not antiquities, as you'll see from the numbers I share, I'm often buying directly from family members who are in possession of a grandmother or a great aunt's items or from the very owners themselves. I also am invited to people's homes to buy things from their past parents or from themselves before they downsize. It's very rare that we buy something from someone who is a basic dealer in vintage jewelry. So my question is, how is this ordinance supposed to mitigate substance abuse when the items being sold or purchased and the cash will still go into the hands of the seller? So it's basically our burden to keep purchased items for 7 days and spend man hours to not only process the items regularly, but document and electronically file it. To me, the loss here is completely to the business and not the seller who has obtained payment for the items and is on their way. This is in no way enlightens me on how this is supposed to help keep controlled substances off the street, and I also don't see how it limits theft. I want to share with you some of the purchases and sales numbers I've had in jewelry over the past 10 months. So these would be from November till this past August. During those 10 months, we paid out a total of $584.30 to a total of 53 jewelry selling customers. This averages $58.43 a month, averaging $1,102 a customer. Average price per piece amount of paid on jewelry was $273. Mainly, this is because we do the majority of our jewelry business with costume jewelry. We purchased a total of 214 jewelry items, with the highest payout on a piece being $1,260 and the lowest $0.90, making the average piece of jewelry's payout $585. So you can see why I find the requirements of the ordinance troubling. The ordinance would require us to spend more on payroll to see that these low-profit items are documented, organized, photographed, and to photograph the seller, and on top of that, not put the items out for 7 days. I believe it's possible that you may have in mind specific goals of this ordinance and specifically which businesses you believe are a factor in seeing success to your goal. I would ask that you reconsider how you've written this ordinance not to include all businesses under the secondhand model so indiscriminately. I've shown you how our numbers on jewelry business and have shared with you how we have proof that authorities will not always assume quick responsibility toward cases of theft. I believe this ordinance would propose unnecessary hardship on my small business and others like mine, as well as that I believe what you're hoping to solve with these mandates are not issues that our businesses will likely give you great success on. The loss here outweighs the reward and is to be burdened by the shoulders of businesses who are just getting by. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you for your time.
My name is Matt Taylor. Gary Taylor's my dad. We're with Music Around, 2609 East Broadway, Suite 117. So I have a few things. I'll keep it short and sweet. Being open 6 years, I'm the store manager. I see what goes on, the gear that comes in. I see it every day. I can honestly say and know where every single item is in our store. We build relationships with all our customers. Danielle, that spoke earlier, comes in quite a bit. You know, I can honestly say in the 6 years we've been open, I think I've had 5 items that have been stolen, and Jeff somewhere in there. I've worked with Jeff a lot with video surveillance. I pulled from our recorder. I gave him pictures of the product that was stolen or the item and sent it to him, and he's got his job done. I know he stepped away for a little bit from his position, and I did notice a decline in performance with I don't know who took over that position, but one instance, a guitar that was stolen, the gentleman contacted me, and it was about a $300 guitar, and told me the description. And I had a guy call saying he had the specific guitar he wanted to sell, and I knew it was a stolen guitar. And I shot him an offer over the phone, just tell him, I could probably offer you this, to get him in the store because I wanted that guitar to give back to the owner. He brought it in. We told the guy it was stolen, and he just immediately – we got his information. I probed questions. That's a big thing, is probing questions and having the right employee training to know if something is stolen or not. So I probed questions, I got his information, and then I told him this was reported stolen, I have to keep it. Long story short, the kid got his guitar back. Again, Jeff was not in this position at this time. I'd sent 2 emails to some detective at the police department, never heard back. I've never heard anything else from the case. Also, as far as prosecution, is it $1,000 minimum for being a felony? No? $500? Okay. So to me, that's big to be prosecuted, you know, because a lot of these criminals, I know one guy in particular that was in our store that stole some, he sold us some stolen gear. I think he's walked on probation, and he was a drug abuser, I can say. Back to the employees probing questions, proper training, you know, all my guys know what to look out for. You know, if you have any suspicion, you probe and ask, you know, oh, why'd you start playing? Or, you know, why are you selling your guitar? You know, asking the right questions is huge. And as far as like the drug abuse stuff, you don't know if someone's on drugs, but I can honestly say that, you know, I'm there all the time. I very rarely get anybody in that looks like they're in need of a fix or some kind of drug, or do I see anybody really suspicious? You know, it's usually just people wanting to either trade in their guitar for a better one or just sell it. Cause it's been sitting in the closet for years, and you can tell by the dust, you know, accumulated on the guitar or whatever it may be. And, you know, I'd like to see the statistics of stolen goods that are actually being sold for cash for drugs. I'd like to know that. I mean, because I don't think there really is a statistic to know that. And, you know, those are my main points. I just wanted you guys to know the gear that comes in. It's not a huge thing of stolen stuff that I know of that comes in on a, you know, daily basis. I don't see a lot of stolen stuff. I think, like I said, 5 items in the past 6 years, maybe, that I've known to be stolen, and I think those cases have been closed and moved on. So I think, you know, a lot of people are thinking, you know, stolen stuff comes in every single day. I mean, be a pawn shop, our store, clothing, and I don't think that's true. I think criminals are smart enough to go around those ropes. Craigslist is huge for stolen goods. Numerous guitars have been on Craigslist that people have come in and said, you know, I had it stolen and I saw it on Craigslist, and so on. So anyway, that's some information I just wanted to share with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any questions? All right. Thank you so much.
I'll keep this brief because I don't have a prepared statement, but I'm Taylor Bacon from Hit Records on 10 Hit Street. And I don't know if you've been to a vinyl record store, but we deal with huge volumes of inventory. Somebody might come in with 600 records, and 580 of those records are garbage, and they take up a lot of space. And oftentimes, their value is extremely low, so we buy very low, and we sell very low, but that's how we make our money. Because vinyl is extremely heavy, people can't get it to us, so I have to go to their homes to buy it. And people are very protective of their record collections. They don't give that stuff very easily. And it's not easy to transfer, so I have to go there to get it. And it's usually someone whose family members just parted away. It's someone who's making space, or something they've got from an auction, or if they've been hoarding from garage sales. You know, it's a very funny thing, you know, vinyl records. And I don't want to make you yawn and take up your time, but the camera aspect would be incredibly lame. We are a record store. We are a laid-back environment. Having a camera seems offensive, and having people take their picture when they want to sell us back their indie rock record that they were unhappy with just seems like out of control. But not to mention just like the sheer volume of stuff that we deal with, the amount of time it would take to put all those lame, terrible records down on paper would really just, we can barely run a cool and operational store without, you know, just doing what we already do, which is endless piles of inventory shuffling around everywhere. You don't know where it's coming from. We don't have storage for it. And that would make it really difficult for us to do business. And I think that the ordinance is coming from a good place, but for record stores, that's just the worst. So thank you.
Thank you for your time. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
Good evening, and thank you. I'm Larry Wayland. 3203 Brown Station Road is our location of Modern Arms at the Brown Station location. We are one of the licensed pawn stores here in Columbia. We specialize in firearms virtually exclusively, with rare exception to other things are sporting goods related. We already comply with all of the pawn regulations. I'm very concerned about the verbiage as expressed by Mr. Mays, the video documentation being required to be kept for a year. I looked at the expense of that, and I hadn't even thought about the redundancy if I did have a DVR crash. The very valid point that I could be, you know, held criminally responsible for the standards as the statute's written, and would be, you know, some sort of cloud storage or some sort of backup storage to do that. And again, the photographs of the customers at 90 degrees, the photographs with the customer and the item is overly burdensome. I think that there's a big disconnect between the business I run and people consuming too much illegal narcotics. I think there's already a lot of laws on the books. And if we just want to make regulations for regulation's sake, this is probably a pretty good effort, because we got a bunch of law-abiding business owners that are just going to go, okay, it's a little harder, a little less money at the end of the day, but I'll try to keep going, instead of focusing on the criminal element. Selling illicit drugs is a crime. And they don't have a business license. They don't have a storefront. There's no video surveillance. And our police staff is our police force is horribly understaffed, underfunded by the city. And I believe that it's poorly directed by our police chief, who takes a very soft position on drugs. And I don't think that there is a rational connection between putting extra burdens on law-abiding business owners to comply with a regulation and illicit drug use. I thank you for your time. Thank you for having this meeting. Any questions?
All right, thank you.
My name is Ted Sharp. I'm the manager of Slackers, CDs, and Games at 1010 East Broadway, and I'm extremely nervous right now. A lot of my issues I have with the language of this proposal has already been brought up, namely that a lot of local businesses, a lot of local independent businesses like us, don't really have the sufficient time, resources, or staffing to catalog thousands and thousands and thousands of used items that we take in every week, nor do we have the real estate to hold those same thousands of items for 7 days before putting them out or sending them to our warehouse for redistribution. One thing I wanted to mention that I haven't really heard anybody else bring up is the inclusion of barter in the language of the proposal, which is, as everybody knows, is trading for other things. The reason I'm bringing this up is because most of, while Slackers does pay pay cash in the form of a check for certain items. Most of the stuff that comes into us, we give store credit for. So people are trading things for other things in the store. So for the purpose of the reduction of substance abuse, I'm not really sure how relevant barter is to this debate. I can't speak for every secondhand store in Columbia, but Slackers doesn't sell drugs. So until we do, I think that putting items being traded for other merchandise in the same kind of category, I think is unnecessary. Also, with that in mind, I noticed something in the ordinance that said we wouldn't be able to buy items or barter with anybody under the age of 18. If anybody's been in Slackers, that's most of our clientele is under 18. So as written, this ordinance would prevent a 16-year-old kid from like trading a Pokemon game for another Pokemon game, unless they came in with like their grandma who we'd have to take a mugshot of. It seems excessive. Also kind of along the lines of barter, a lot of people might not know this, but, very large businesses in town, such as Walmart and Best Buy, do barter. They do take in, trades towards other things. And, stores like GameStop actually pay cash for stuff like that. I'm just kind of wondering, would those billion-dollar corporations fall under this same ordinance? Would they have to comply with this, like local businesses such as Slackers or like independent businesses would? And if they did have to comply, I would imagine that they would have resources necessary to update their infrastructure and get the technology required to comply with this ordinance that Slackers just couldn't afford as a independent business with such a low overhead already. I think that's all I got.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
How y'all doing? Jay Lidner, office at 1400 Forum Boulevard. I felt compelled to speak because two of my tenants at one of my shopping centers have addressed you all tonight. So we are a landlord, two businesses, and certainly in one shopping center, I actually have four different businesses that deal in secondhand goods. Two of those have spoke before you tonight, one of those being GameStop, which was addressed just a minute ago. Corporately certainly has the resources in place to do this. This is really more of a squeeze on the local business. My problem is, one, I'm more concerned as a business owner and property owner on the crime that's taking place in our businesses, the shoplifting that's taking place in our businesses that we don't have the resources to deal with. I think that's a far bigger issue than what we're here speaking about tonight. Also, I don't believe that we've really addressed the subject of the regionality of Columbia. This ordinance won't do anything to stop the criminals in Columbia from driving to Fulton, Jeff City, Boonville, Moberly, and selling their stolen goods to businesses outside of our community that don't have this ordinance in place. And that means tax dollars are gone. You know, anyone that's a legit buyer that's from Jeff City that wants to come up here and do something, if they don't want to get their mugshot taken, they're not coming up here. They're going to stay in their community and buy what they have. And so we're losing tax dollars. Our local businesses, the mom and pops, are the ones that really suffer through this. And I really think we're trying to create a solution for a problem that doesn't exist.
Thank you. Thanks. Any questions?
My name is Eugene Elkin. I live at 3406 Rangeline. I've been attending city council meetings for more than 7 years. I am going to look at this much different as you're trying to make a decision. Everyone in this room is sitting under a system of green. Before you is broken glass on the counter. The entire room, the seats you're on, the floor you're walking on comes under green, recycle. We are talking about items that can be recycled, creating businesses in the city of Columbia. The reason I mentioned the 7+ years is If you were just here last night, the city revenue is going down, down, and down. You're getting ready to attack businesses that are operating legit. And there is a difference. Somebody needs to get to the bottom of the difference and not overwhelm the good guys against the bad guys. I helped to bring Habitat for Humanity here in 1988 with the name Show Me in front of Show Me Central Habitat. Today we have a restore. We have those restores scattered throughout our country. There is nothing in the value that's given to the restore, but wait a minute. There's value in everything that we're talking about here tonight. How would you like to see all those items buried in our earth, bringing on poisoning of the water because somebody decided it was a really smart idea to get rid of pawn shops and all these dealings of used items, so let's just throw it in the earth and destroy everybody. This is a very big discussion here tonight. What is right and what is wrong? Before I came along, when I learned of this city council room being recycling, I do go back to the 1980s. That's when I started learning how to recycle. Today, we can now recycle all plastics when we're at the curb. We need to teach more about recycling. We need to maybe simply have the seller present their ID and the list of the items to be sold. And under the lady operating the clothing section, that's exactly what she's doing. She's spending time. Why not let the seller do it? Here's my list. Here's my ID. And we can do business. If there's an issue, the authorities will look into the matter. But to complicate what is a current source of revenue for the city of Columbia, we are talking about cutting even more dollars out of what they think everything's happening on the computer. I don't know. But it's something to really think deeply about, because I've tried so hard to help this city to come up from what could have been very poor lives. Those poor, low-income individuals I've worked with for the last 7 years, I do work with homeless. They need to have a place they can go and buy that dollar item. Or do we want to perpetuate more stealing? We have got to figure out what it takes to keep the low down and out from stealing. And that's my ultimate goal when I speak of green. We have got to realize this is a green industry that you're attacking. And we've been raised, or I have, that everything needs to keep on being recycled. Why? Because it doesn't deserve to be in the earth as long as it's perfectly good. Let's use them. God bless everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. All right. Seeing no additional individuals who like to make public comment, no further questions or comments from the commission, I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. We will take all of your thoughts into consideration, and we'll be looking at that to help draft another draft of this ordinance, hopefully, and we'll be letting you know. Yes, Michael, do you have something? Yep, definitely.
On a suggestion from Gary, we're going to have a brainstorming session on October 13th here at City Hall at 5:30 about ways that we can work together to prevent theft and the reduction of stolen items. So continuing to listen to feedback and adjust accordingly. I appreciate everyone coming out.
Daytime.
October 13th, 5:30, and it'll be...
I'm looking to Steve here. Yeah, I was going to say, and please know that the Substance Abuse Advisory Commission is serving at the pleasure of the council and CPD, and so we are hosting this forum tonight, and that's where we're at for this. But once again, thank you everybody for coming. I really do appreciate it. I will now adjourn the public hearing. Did you have something? Okay. We'll now adjourn the public hearing. Thank you guys for coming. Have a great evening. Thank you.